The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Oh, what a wonder that absence keeps turning into something. Oh, what might emerge for us today? So today we turn from the first noble truth to the second noble truth in our reflections on this core teaching of the Buddha Dharma. I wanted to open with a story from the suttas. There's a householder named Upali who goes to have a conversation with the Buddha. Few circumstances transpire, and then it's this that I want to share for how it says the Buddha prepares Upali's mind to receive the teachings on the Four Noble Truths. It doesn't dive right in, and this is an important point. The Four Noble Truths we often introduce as like the first teaching, but you can see in this little section from the ancient teachings that actually the mind does well to be prepared to receive the Four Noble Truths. And this is how it's written there. So it goes, then the Buddha gave the householder Upali progressive instruction. That is, talk on giving, talk on virtue, talk on heavens. He explained the danger, degradation, and defilement in sensual pleasures, and the blessings of renunciation. And when the Buddha knew that the householder Upali's mind was ready, receptive, free from hindrances, elated, and confident, he expounded to him the teaching special to the Buddhas. Suffering, its origin, its cessation, and the path. You might recognize these as the Four Noble Truths in brief. And it says that just as a clean cloth would evenly take on dye, so too the householder Upali, as he sat there, had this spotless, immaculate vision of the Dharma arise in him. It's so beautiful. It's amazing to me also that just hearing the teaching was transformative for Upali. I think that shows the power of reflection and for the power of cultivating the supports for understanding and wisdom and well-being. So the tradition often teaches the Four Noble Truths as dukkha, suffering, the origin, cause of suffering as the second noble truth, the cessation of suffering as the third, and the fourth noble truth as the path, the way to the cessation of suffering. Now, Gill gives some great talks on a distinction. He brings in something called the Four Liberating Insights, where he points out that the Four Noble Truths as such aren't named so many times in the suttas, but the direct, clear seeing of dukkha and its arising, clearly seeing the arising of dukkha right here in experience, then clearly seeing its cessation, and clearly seeing the path, that these have a liberating power to see these four things. It's a really powerful framing, I think, and it points us back to the practice happening right here in this mind, in this body. In other words, our experience of dukkha, our experience of suffering, is constructed or made or born out in this mind. That's how we experience it. Not to say that's the only condition, of course. So I think that this is this emphasis on the mind is well expressed in the beginning of the first verses of the Dhammapada. It say all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, and made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. Such is the importance of the mind. So, as the task of the First Noble Truth was to understand, comprehend dukkha in direct experience, the task of the Second Noble Truth is to abandon. To abandon what, and abandon in what sense? So, first, abandon in what sense? The word in English, abandon, has certain connotations. But when you look at the teachings, what you find is that it's much more like letting go of what's not needed anymore. Or the way we use abandon in the term abandon ship. The ship is clearly going down. It's time to get off for our safety and well-being. That kind of abandon ship. And what are we abandoning? We're abandoning the conditions that give rise to suffering. The conditions that give rise to suffering. And this points to something important about suffering, and that is it arises based on conditions, just like everything else in our experience. That because suffering is conditioned, it's not an instance of suffering isn't forever stable, forever permanent. It's bound to change. So the conditions that give rise to suffering, in the classic teaching, it says that the origin or the cause or the arising of suffering is a certain kind of craving. Now, of course, we in Buddhist circles we might run the risk of generalizing and saying something like all desire is the cause of suffering. But this isn't quite right if you look closely. What the sort of craving that leads on to suffering is what we're looking for. And the Buddha points to a few. The Pali is kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. And Bhikkhu Bodhi, the prolific translator, summarizes these like so. And he says the desire for pleasure and possessions, the drive for survival, the urge to bolster the sense of ego with power, status, and privilege. And these are the sorts of things that we need to watch for, keep an eye on, because they can lead on. They can lead on through clinging, creation of identity, to the sort of suffering that the Buddha is helping us to eradicate. So if we want to abandon the conditions that give rise to suffering, we have to get to know them really closely. The Buddha's analysis of dukkha, of suffering and craving, traces its origin to a sort of darkening of the mind that we term ignorance. In Pali, the word is actually the opposite term of wisdom. So for today, for the next few minutes, talk about a few examples of how in one of the Buddhist descriptions, we go from sense experience to clinging. And look at these links pretty closely and in a few ways so that they can be practiced with. These few links of the 12-fold chain, say like a 12-factor analysis of how suffering arise. I'm just going to zoom in on a couple. And these are, first is a moment of sense contact. That's like a sound coming to the ear. With that as a condition, a feeling arises. That is a feeling of pleasant or unpleasant, or neither, pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. With feeling as condition, the conditions are in place for a craving to arise, a thirsting to arise, an impulse to get closer or to move away. And this impulse can condition clinging, upadana, that's grabbing on, grasping. And then grabbing on, grasping as condition comes identity making, becoming. So we'll look at this in just a few ways. So let's take this example of a sound. It comes to the ear. Say you're sitting in meditation and you hear a bird outside. You happen to like the sound of this bird. First thing that happens, if you're noticing very, very closely, sound comes to the door. There's a pleasant feeling that arises in the body, maybe in the ear itself. And if you watch closely, that pleasant feeling arises. Oh, here comes craving. Oh, the bird has faded away and I'm wanting. Sound of the bird has faded away and I'm craving for more sound of bird. That was so pleasant. Or I'm craving for more pleasant feeling that's arisen. That craving arises and we grasp on. We start strategizing about how we're going to hear more birds, fantasizing about birds. And then all of a sudden we have created an identity that's, oh, I'm the person who likes and seeks birds. We've gone from the simple sound, sitting here in meditation, arising, a pleasant feeling, wanting it and clinging on, and then all of a sudden we've created a self. Imagine. So this that's sort of an innocuous example of how that can happen with a pleasant sensation or a pleasant sense contact that arises. Also can we can take the example of maybe unpleasant speech. Let's say we're having a conversation, and let's say at our ear again, we come into contact with a sort of everyday but innocuous speech. There's no like particular boundary issue that needs pushing back on. There's no threat. There's just the experience of unpleasant. Speech comes to the ear again. Unpleasant sensation this time. And then craving comes up in the form of wanting to push away, push away, push away. I want to push against the experience. And then all of a sudden we're grasping on to the pushing, doubling down on the pushing, if we will. So pleasant and unpleasant, if you're watching for it, it's happening all the time throughout the day. You can see and feel and sense the way that pleasant and unpleasant, they don't remain just themselves. They can. We have the power to do this with mindfulness. But very, very often, if we're not paying so close attention, if ignorance is in the way, what happens is our pleasant experience becomes craving, clinging, and we just go full in. We become fully committed to an impulse. We're no longer in control of our body and mind. Craving and ignorance and clinging have taken over. So my encouragement for today might be, if you happen to notice this pleasant and unpleasant sensation, get really close to noticing how it influences us, influences the mind, influences the body. And the way this fulfills the task of the second noble truth, it supports us in abandoning craving because we can see and observe and recognize how craving operates. We understand suffering as suffering. We sense it, we see it, and we can maybe have the opportunity to let it go. So we'll start with just getting to know it, getting to know suffering, and then through observation and patience, practice letting go of this cause of the second noble truth. Thanks so much for your attention today. And tomorrow we'll pick up with the third noble truth. May all beings have the conditions for freedom. May all beings abandon the causes of suffering and know true happiness. Take care.